Mad Radio on a Wednesday. Game 2, Rockets Warriors tonight. Lance McCullers will join us tomorrow in the 8 o'clock hour. The Astros will go for the rubber game of their series out west against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Let's go to the hotline right now in advance of Game 2. Byers Barricades Hotline. My friend Mark Medina, who works for the San Jose Mercury News, joins us on the show. Mark, Mike, and Seth, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great because I'm on your show. I appreciate it. I'm honored.
Well, that's a radio voice.
Mark's
there.
Got a great voice.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Mark, let's start out with this. Are the Warriors scared of the Rockets?
I don't think they are at all. They weren't scared when they lost two regular season games out of three matchups because they felt like they knew they were going to turn it on when it counted, and they accounted for just the different injuries and some of the complacency. And I think after winning game one, they really are not afraid of the Houston Rockets. But with that being said, I don't think that they're thinking, hey, we're going to sweep this and it's easy. I think they're anticipating the Rockets making some adjustments and making it a little bit more competitive than in game one.
Do you see that? You know what I can tell, though, Mark? I can tell the fact that you took that question seriously lets me know one thing, and it's the Bay Area is scared of the Rockets.
They are trembling.
Thank you.
They're
thank
terrified.
You. Finally, somebody tells the truth.
Here's the important stuff before I get to all the basketball stuff. So I chose not to go out last night, which was on me. I should have gone out with Mark and a few other people.
You're a young man.
Yeah, our producer Landry happened to be there. This is the important stuff. Mark, what did you think of our producer Landry Locker? What were your impressions of him?
He was amazing. I was very well impressed. I think there's a reason why the show is awesome besides your presence because of him. And also, I felt like I couldn't come up with some kind of reason why I can't go on the show because he would wonder, okay, did something happen last night? And I wanted to make sure that I was on my P's and Q's.
That makes sense. So we've had a debate, Mark, on the show over the course of the year where Seth and Landry felt like I was crazy for this. I felt like the Warriors were kind of bored during the regular season, not as engaged as they normally would be because they've won two championships, most of those guys, one in the case of Kevin Durant. Do you feel like they were bored in the regular season?
Well, they were bored, but I don't think that explains everything. I think to open the season, a lot of it had to do with the fact that they went on a preseason trip to China for 2 weeks. And for someone who went on the trip and didn't play any basketball at all, like, it took a lot out of me in terms of the jet lag and the travel. So I totally understand that. And then I think at the end of the season, when they lost 10 of their last 17 games, yes, they were bored because they were locked into the number two seed, and whether they won the rest of their games, lost the rest of their games, nothing was going to change from that standpoint. But you also had to take into account that Steph Curry was out for the last 10 games, and they had overlapping absences to their other all-star players with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, and had also been resting some of their key veterans with Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston. And so as a result of that, you had a lot of different lineups. You had an incomplete, sample size in terms of what do the Warriors actually look like with their normal roster. And then I think in between the beginning and the end, you saw a team that could turn it on and they were trying to develop good habits and they would go on long winning streaks and they showed their dominance. They still had the number two seed. But then there would be stretches where the complacency would set in, the fatigue would set in, maybe some minor ailments would cause Steve Kerr to rest those guys because he knew the long game. So it was, I think, by and large, the typical season that defending championship teams go through, where there is some complacency at times, and then they start ratcheting up the intensity in others, and it's kind of hard to really gauge what really matters and what doesn't.
And then I guess the other question would be, is with Andre Iguodala, was it even complacency or boredom with him, or was it the fact that he's 34 years old and that he's at that stage in his career where, you know what, he's going to be a different guy in the playoffs because the schedule gets a little bit easier. He can just load up and gear up because he's been a different guy in the playoffs, has he not?
Yeah, he's definitely been a different guy. I think specifically for Andre, I don't know if complacency is the right word. I think it was more of pacing. And here's, I think, where the difference is. There's no question that the fact that he would sit out at certain times would affect his rhythm. And I think it affected his shooting stroke. And he didn't want to be too aggressive because of what you said. He's saving himself for the postseason. He was also trying to understand team dynamics of, hey, he's playing with four All-Stars, three of of whom are really good shooters with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, so he's going to defer to them. But at the same time, even during those regular season hiccups, he was still an integral part because his veteran leadership, there were literally a lot of times where he was pointing on the floor to all four different teammates of, hey, you need to cut here, you need to go there. And because there were so many fluid parts in the bench rotation, I think he was an integral piece of making sure that the entire foundation didn't collapse when the All-Stars weren't on the floor. But you've obviously seen a different component with him in the playoffs where he's playing more minutes, he has more of an offensive role, he's starting, you know, in the lineup with the four other All-Stars. So I think when you combine all those things, you're seeing a different Andre Iguodala.
Mark Medina is our guest from the Mercury News via the Buyers Barricades hotline. You and I, about 2 years ago this time, we were at the wedding of a mutual friend. We talked about Mike D'Antoni, who you know pretty well because you covered the Lakers for a year with Mike. And would it be fair to say, Mark, that I think both of us have been collectively probably surprised by how much success Mike D'Antoni has had here with James Harden, now Harden and Paul. Do you think that's a fair statement to make based on the conversation we had when that hire was made 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of down the middle with Mike because I always knew he was an accomplished coach. He's a great offensive mind, but I think when you look at his past experiences, with the exception of Steve Nash, who is considered like the greatest teammate ever, there was always a tug and pull of how Mike handled his star players. Sometimes those star players would do their own thing, and I remember just kind of initially thinking with James Harden, he was a guy who was used to just doing his own thing and running ISO, which he still does, but I was wondering how was that going to fit in to kind of Mike's team concept. And here I think you've found Mike to be able to find a happy medium where he allows James to do his thing. He's kind of allowed him to have multiple roles in terms of being a playmaker and moving off the ball. And I think when I look at his time with the Lakers, like it was a weird set of circumstances because I think the first season he came in under the expectation from Laker fans that Phil Jackson was going to be the guy. So he already lacked equity going in, and it was tough not to have a training camp. But the problem was he had a system that wasn't really conducive to that team's roster where they had a lot of post-up players, they had a lot of older players, a lot of their shooters besides Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash weren't necessarily consistent. So they weren't able to really kind of play at that pace that Mike envisions, and there was a tug and pull among all the stars, and eventually Mike kind of relented and allowed Kobe, Bryant, and Pau Gasol to kind of play their two-man game. But when you look at his second season there with the Lakers, there were so many injuries. I think Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant played for a combined 21 games that season, and he had a roster, frankly, with a lot of players that were cast-offs on other teams, and they were on one-year contracts. And so I always liken his role that season to almost being a MacGyver, where the front office told Mike, hey, here is a paperclip, here is an eraser, and here's a pen. Somehow make a bomb out of this, right? And so he only had 27 wins that season, but I think given the circumstances that he was dealt with an injury-plagued roster and a lot of unproven players, I think you could make the case that he overachieved with that team. So a lot of kind of mixed things going on when you look at his time specifically in L.A. And obviously with the Rockets, it's completely different where he has star power and he has players that are conducive to his offensive principles.
Mark, this has been a big topic nationally, locally, the last 36 hours. Do you think the Rockets, from your standpoint, ran too much isolation in game one?
They did, but I don't know what's the better alternative. And the reason I say that is if you're going to mimic the Golden State Warriors, the Warriors are the ones that do that the best because they have four all-star players. And with the Rockets, you want to fully take advantage of James Harden's strengths as an ISO player. There's always a happy medium, and going back to Mike's philosophies, I know when he covered the Lakers, he would always have this phrase about the ball finds energy. When people are touching the ball, they feel more engaged. So I don't think that the Rockets should necessarily abandon their system. This is how they got to where they are. And no one's ever going to be able to mimic the Warriors, you know, culture in terms of the fluid ball movement and the off-ball cutting because they have more talent. But I think there has to be a way to get the role players more involved. They have to cash in on some of those open layups that they frankly missed. And I think most importantly, they have to be more disciplined on defense. There's no reason why Klay Thompson should be left open for so many three-pointers. And it was head-scratching because I understood why they applied single coverage to Kevin Durant, you know, with different defenders. If you're going to double team him, he can just kick it out to the two greatest shooters ever, yep, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So I agree with Mike when he was defying yesterday and saying we're not going to be changing anything. This is who we are. But I think there is a happy medium where, you know, maybe they don't run ISO every single play down the floor, but I don't think they should completely abandon it.
Mark, we look forward to game two. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, bud.
Thanks, all right, there Mark. You go. Mark Medina via the Buyers Barricades Hotline. Here are my quick final thoughts.
He should do more radio.
He does a lot of TV stuff also.
Does he? Okay.
He's great. He does a great job.
What's the name of the website that the Chronicle's doing now? TexasSportsNation?
Yes.
.com? Okay.
TexasSportsNation.
I gotta okay pay there? Some cash for this thing. No, I don't know. All of a sudden, I died.
You died?
My brain just died here at 9:53 a.m. with just 1.5 minutes left to go.
I have a couple of very quick and brief thoughts about game two tonight. My confidence level is sort of, it's medium because I think that, here's my big thing. Chris Paul can play much better. Clint Capella can get more production. The role players can play much better. Role players usually play at home. They're obviously playing at home tonight. My main focus to start this game, if I'm Mike D'Antoni, if I'm this Rockets team, is I want to unlock the Capella pick and roll. I want to get Chris Paul going early. I want to get Ariza and Tucker the basketball and some shots. Obviously, you're not going to just hand them the ball and let them work. I want to let them feel like they're engaged and into the basketball game. That, to me, is a big priority from an offensive standpoint. I do agree with Mark. They ran too much isolation on Monday. Isolation is going to be a big part of it, fine. But you don't have to start with that. Start by trying to get those guys involved in the game. And obviously, defense, to me, is the biggest part. Communication, can't leave guys open. They're favored by two.
Yes, and I would like to leave with this. Godspeed, Jake Mariznick. May you hit 400 in Fresno and be back up soon.
I'm sure. I'm guessing we'll see him back at some point soon. All right, In the Loop is coming up next. Lance McCullers will join us tomorrow
We've got suits hanging outside the studio.
We have suits hanging out as well.
Fired. I get really nervous when the suits are around. They're looking at us.
Usually not a group
of suits.
Usually
like,
not on a Wednesday.
Like five of them right there.
I feel like a Friday is usually the big firing day.
Okay, good. They're smiling too. I think we should be all right.
All right, gentlemen's bet real quick before the game tonight. What jersey will Gerald Green be wearing when he arrives to the Toyota Center?
Well, based on Monday, he'll be wearing a Dash jersey, I suppose.
He should be wearing an...
Mario Elie.
No, now they've had time to see that the Astros wore the Rockets uniform, so I think he's going to wear an Astros jersey of some sort. Nolan Ryan.
Okay. All right. In the Loop is next. But before that, we grade a Boomer Esiason.